Fasten your chin strap and get ready for the snap. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
All right, it's a big Thursday on the Eric Ainge Show. FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Brian Rice in as Eric Ainge under the weather. Joel, he previewed yesterday that the kids were up. Kids were sick. So now Eric Ainge is sick.
Sounds about right.
He is making child rearing sound less and less appealing every day. I know a lot of people out there are dealing with sick kids. They're dealing with sickness themselves. So hope everybody's on the mend.
It's not even so much necessarily a child issue. It's more of just a humanity issue. People are getting sick. It's that time of year.
Wash your hands.
Por favor.
Yeah. His using of hand sanitizer yesterday apparently didn't help. The good news was Sports 180 was on remote, so the microphone that he was using was not used for 3 hours until sports talk. So the germs had time to die.
Is that how that works?
I think so.
Or are you just hoping that's how it works?
Most germs die pretty quick on stuff. Like within a couple hours.
All right.
I didn't go to medical school, though.
No, you did not.
I don't work for the CDC. I'm not sure anybody still works for the CDC. But after a one-day absence, we can now have the return of the game plan sounder because it's time to look at the game plan. We will end the game plans laid out for you every day by 42nd Street. 42SD.com is how you find out more about 42nd Street.
Goes into battle without a game plan. The Eric Ainge Show looks to the sideline to kick off the drive every day with the game plan. The game plan is laid out by 42nd Street. Visit 42SD.com today.
All right, Joel, we will deep dive into the Vols and Arkansas last night. Yikes. Not a great night at the barn for the Vols, and I talked about it in the crossover a second ago. It's become apparent with this Tennessee basketball team that you can tell in the first 5 minutes how this game is going to go.
Oftentimes, yeah, I mean, they've had some good come from behind wins. The rally against Alabama, they've pulled out some close ones earlier in the season. But you're right; it's been a matter of Tennessee needs to get off to a fast start, and even against some of the better teams that Tennessee has lost to, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Kansas, LSU even, Tennessee has started well in those games and is still lost, and it's very difficult, I think, for this team that quite frankly, it's not built to be able to come from behind for an early double-digit deficit. Almost did it last night, pulled it within two there in the second half, but that 14-1 run that Arkansas got off on Tennessee, just too much to overcome down the stretch.
We'll talk to Jesse Smithy at 5starpreps.com coming up at 9:30. Coaches saying things at the combine continues. Ron Rivera said this, the new coach in Washington. We like Dwayne Haskins, but we will consider all options, and we'll talk to Tua Tagovailoa and Joe Burrow. Now, Washington's not moving up to take Joe Burrow, I don't believe. But maybe they're having some wishful thinking that Joe Burrow's small hands will scare off a notoriously poor ownership group in Cincinnati.
Well, and there's always the possibility to trade up. The Giants have been open about the possibility of shopping that number four pick. So teams that are looking to make a move, and you should still do your due diligence because you never know what's going to happen around the draft and with trade. So I get it. The Redskins should talk to Joe Burrow if they're considering drafting a quarterback. You should talk to everybody. I don't think Burrow is going to end up in Washington. I think the Bengals are likely going to take him unless something happens and they decide they like Chase Young better. But yeah, you got to do your due diligence and just talk to everybody.
They like the guy they have that they just drafted last season, but they may draft a quarterback anyway. That's not a ringing endorsement for Haskins. Mike McCarthy said Dak Prescott is the quarterback to get the Cowboys a Super Bowl.
I don't disagree with that. I don't know if he's the quarterback. I don't think he's the only quarterback, but I think Prescott has played at a level that, if he has enough support around him, he is capable of helping a team there. because I think his numbers have been impressive. I think he's played well. I thought his play elevated a little bit this season. I don't think he's a, I'm not saying he's an elite quarterback in the NFL, but Dallas's issues this past season were not solely on Dak Prescott.
Jeff Darlington reported this morning on Get Up on ESPN, quote, "I'm now at the point where I would be stunned if Tom Brady went back to New England."
Ooh, baby.
That's kind of a bombshell. What teams are pursuing him? That's their current topic on Get Up. We'll talk about that as well, but how does that change New England if that is indeed the case? And why would New England want to move on there and not show Tom Brady the value? We'll pick our upset of the week. Thanks to Gray Hodges and Craftmade. Lady Vols and Ole Miss face off tonight at Thompson Bowling Arena, senior night for a couple of Lady Vols seniors in Cam Harris and Lou Brown. We'll get the preview for that and everything else that's going on in the world of sports today. And that is the game plan. It's laid out for you every day by 42nd Street. 42SD.com is how you find out more about 42nd Street and what they can do for you and your business. Design and marketing brands, Eric Ainge and the Eric Ainge Show. Trust their brand to 42nd Street. You can chat with them or give them a call. Mike and his crew are ready to answer your questions now at 382-7007-42SD.com. The Eric Ainge Show continues next. We're talking Tennessee hoops on the other side on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. An ugly night for Tennessee hoops last night in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So we welcome you back into the EA Show, FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Mason Jones, 37 points last night for Arkansas as the Razorbacks stayed firmly on the NCAA tournament bubble with an 86-69 win over Tennessee. Jordan Bowden showed up for the Vols, led Tennessee in scoring with 19 points, 4 three-pointers, but ultimately not enough as Arkansas came up with the win. It was not fun from the start. Tennessee made a run. We'll talk about the run coming up in a little bit, but made a run in the start of the second half, but otherwise it was all Arkansas all night long.
Yeah, and Mason Jones, his ability to score in a variety of ways, I think really gives Arkansas a totally different dimension on offense, and it makes up for the fact that they have a lack of size, a lack of rebounding, and Isaiah Joe coming back has, I think, proven to create a big impact. They lose him. They go 0-5 when he's not on the floor. Now they've won two straight. Granted, that was Missouri and Tennessee, but there's a direct impact that Arkansas can point to when trying to show its resume to the tournament selection committee coming up in a couple weeks. Hey, when we didn't have Isaiah Joe, we lost to Missouri and Tennessee. He comes back. We beat both of those teams. So it helps Arkansas. It kind of puts them back in the tournament conversation after they fell off the bubble during the skid. But for Tennessee, just needing to find a way to shut down big-time scorers, because you've got Joe and Jones that, while they were together, were averaging about 38 points per game combined. I mean, Jones went off for 37 by himself, and it's not like Joe had a bad night either. He still put up 22.
Yeah, and I think having that guy back, I mean, another guy that's a 20-points-a-game player, I think having him back gave Jones the ability to do what he did last night, because he's, when you're not having to do it all yourself, when the defense has to focus on somebody else, it opens you up. We were talking on the crossover, a guy that can go for 30 gets my undivided attention if I'm a defense. If I'm a game planner going into that game, I'm going to say that guy's not going to get, within 5 points of his average. Tennessee allowed him to score over 30. Or is it the fourth time this year?
Seventh
time this year.
Yeah, seventh time that he's had a 30-point game this year.
Seven times the guy scored 30, six times going into that game. I'm telling my defense, we're not going to let him get 15. If everybody else beats us, fine. That guy's not going to score over 15 points.
Well, and I think that presents a tough matchup because of the efficiency that Arkansas has around the rest of the floor with Desi Sills. Jimmy Witt Jr. is actually one of the more efficient field goal shooters in the SEC. And then, of course, Isaiah Joe with what he presents on the perimeter. So I think Tennessee, wanted to try to make sure that Joe didn't beat them as well. So you're spreading the floor out a little bit more because somebody has to take the perimeter. Witt is a guy that you still have to account for, and it allows Jones to kind of go off. But I mean, it's not even like, it's not as if Tennessee played poorly against him the entire night. I mean, he was hitting contested shots, contested fadeaways, was double teamed inside the paint, and found a way to get a leaning finger roll to fall. So the guy just has creative ways to get the ball in the hoop. And so when you have a guy that's shooting that efficiently, plus the number of fouls that he's going to draw, the number of times that he got to the free throw line, makes it tough on any defense. But when you have to account for guys like Joe, Sills, and Witt, it makes it that much tougher on a defense. And so for Tennessee, I thought the effort on the boards was really an opportunity where they exposed Arkansas the first time these two teams played, and they didn't do enough of that last night. You need to have a bigger advantage in the rebounding category against Arkansas to really expose their biggest weakness, which is their lack of size, especially in the front court. But they are a backcourt-driven team, and they get a lot of production out of those guys. And it happened last night.
Three Tennessee players in double figures, led by Jordan Bowden's 19, 4 for 10 from the three-point line. Fulke, 15 points, and only 5 rebounds. Yves Pons, 12 points, pulled down 9 boards, had a block to extend his run. He is now creeping up on Tennessee's all-time blocks record.
Yeah, they were saying on the broadcast last night that it's been 3 decades since a player 6'6" or shorter has led the SEC in blocks. Thought that was a pretty impressive stat. They didn't say who that was, though, the last person to do it. So I would be curious to find out who that was. But Yves Pons, yeah, continuing a great streak, continuing to show off that athleticism, and another block.
He needs 6 more to break UT's single-season record. He has 3 regular season games left, and then you're guaranteed 1 in the SEC tournament.
Yeah, I think he can get there. If the streak continues, you're talking about a minimum of 2 games where he gets multiple blocks.
Yeah.
Florida's going to try to get the ball inside to carry Blackshear. I think there will be opportunities for Pons.
Yeah, Saturday against Florida, 2 o'clock, becomes a huge, huge matchup and a big opportunity for Tennessee to still get something that brings it that brings them in and gives them a little hope going into the SEC tournament.
And Florida coming off a really nice win over LSU last night. I thought that was really impressive. Where if you had told me that Kerry Blackshear was going to be held to single-digit points, single-digit rebounds, I would have thought, okay, LSU's got a real chance to go to Gainesville and pull off this win. Instead, it's Florida getting a monster game from Keontae Johnson. They get a good night from Scotty Lewis, and they just crushed LSU last night.
Yeah, and Will Wade said after the game that they just got beaten. And I mean, that when you watch it, I flipped back and forth, especially as the margin continued to increase. Florida's put it on them. And that's the good news about what happened last night is Florida doesn't come in here with an extra day of rest. The bad thing about last night is they come in with a ton of momentum and a ton of confidence, trying to prove that they're better than they've showed at times this year. And coming off a win over one of the best teams in the conference. LSU's losses this year have been fascinating. The loss to Vanderbilt, losing against some of the better teams, at times they look like giant killers that are ready to win the conference and ready to make noise in March. And then at other times they look like a team that will be lucky to get to the second weekend of the tournament.
Well, LSU has now lost 5 of their last 7 in SEC play, and when they started 8-0, it was impressive, but all of these games were coming down to the wire, including the first time that it played against Florida. And so I see LSU. I think they've got a lot of returning players. They've got veterans. They have a really talented 5-star freshman in Trenton Watford, but they haven't gotten the production out of Javonte Smart as much as they were hoping for consistently. They've really been struggling with outside shooting. And I think for LSU, they just play with fire too much, and now you're seeing that kind of even out a little bit more, especially in this last stretch. First 8 games, perfect 8-0. Second, you know, next 7 games, 2-5 with a loss to Vanderbilt, getting crushed by a Florida team that you already have a win over. And so LSU, I think, is just starting to find out, okay, teams are learning how to play against us, and we're not getting the production out of certain guys that we need. And for Florida, they've won 4 of their last 5. The one loss was at Rupp Arena, where they had a lead in the second half. So Florida's playing really good basketball right now.
Tennessee and Alabama now in a tie for 8th in the SEC. You want to avoid being one of the bottom 4 seeds, because then you have to play the extra game in the SEC tournament. the extra game in the SEC tournament. The top four get the double bye. Florida moved ahead of Mississippi State last night with that win to be in the top four. It's Kentucky and Auburn. Kentucky with a two-game lead over Auburn, 13-2 to 11-4. LSU and Florida are tied for third, 10-5. Florida, I believe, now owns the tiebreaker in that one. Then Mississippi State and South Carolina each are 9-6. Texas A&M, 8-7. Tennessee and Alabama, 7-8. Arkansas and Missouri, 6-9. Arkansas moving up. And then Georgia, Ole Miss at 4-11. And Vanderbilt, 1-14. Yikes.
Hey, goodness. And it's just funny because if Aaron Nesmith doesn't get injured, Vanderbilt's not a 1-14 SEC team. Now, they're not a tournament team by any means, but they're not this bad.
Did you see any of South Carolina, Georgia last night? It pushed Tennessee to the alternate channel for the first 10 or 11 minutes.
No, I got back late, so I had to catch Tennessee and Arkansas on the DVR. But yeah, I did not get to see Georgia and South Carolina.
It was not great basketball at the end.
It wasn't the first time they played either.
It was overtime, and it was fun to watch, but it was not great basketball.
Oh, I believe it.
And with those two teams, you can. Georgia now 4-11, as I mentioned. South Carolina 9-6. South Carolina keeps its NCAA tournament hopes alive.
Somewhat. It did a nice job at battling back after a bad non-conference schedule, and then as soon as it got itself back on the bubble, it dropped two straight games. That loss that it had to Mississippi State was just a killer, and then, of course, losing to LSU, which, you know, having to do that, it kind of expected because of how good LSU's been, but just a missed opportunity for South Carolina and then needing overtime to beat a really bad Georgia team. South Carolina really needs a sense of urgency because it's picked up some nice wins in conference play, but the strength of schedule alone isn't going to be enough to get the resume in just for a number of wins. It needs to finish in style here down the last week and a half.
How many bids is the SEC going to get? This was a big topic during the halftime shows last night.
I think it's going to get five. I realize that it has four safely in right now with Mississippi State's win, and Lenardi still hasn't updated his bracketology since Monday. He's got four SEC teams in right now. He had South Carolina, Alabama, and Mississippi State all on the bubble. Arkansas is probably working its way back in, having won two straight, and they're going to have an opportunity where if they get to 20 wins, they're going to be in the conversation. Mississippi State got a monster win over Alabama on Tuesday, so I think the Bulldogs can get back into the tournament field, especially since NC State just lost to North Carolina, last place in the ACC North Carolina earlier in the week. That's a horrible loss for the Wolfpack after getting that monster win over Duke last week. So NC State I could see falling. Richmond I think could continue to tumble. They're in Lenardi's first four out right now. So Mississippi State, UCLA, Stanford kind of jostling for that next spot to replace NC State if they were to fall out. And Providence playing in the Big East. Providence has been one of the hottest teams in the second half of the conference schedule. But because they play in the Big East, you're always at risk to just take losses because of how deep that conference is. So those are some things to look out for. I do think the SEC will get five teams in. They were talking on the broadcast last night that the conference is deserving of six. I don't see that right now because of South Carolina and Alabama taking losses this week. And with Arkansas, okay, it's 1-2 straight. Needs to beat somebody good to really get itself back into the tournament conversation again. So I will say five.
Arkansas down the stretch has Texas A&M to close out the season, LSU, and at Georgia. At Georgia, very winnable this weekend. Then at LSU at home, at Texas A&M, I mean, that LSU game, you circle that, that could be the difference between them going into the SEC tournament with a spot and not.
And right now, with where the rankings stand, you mentioned Georgia and Texas A&M. Those games are on the road, but both of those teams rank outside the top 85 in the net ranking. So if you take a loss, it's a quadrant two loss, which in conference play, that's going to knock you down a peg. So for Arkansas, those are the two important games that you really need to take care of business. And then LSU is your potential resume building one that can really boost you back into the conversation. It would also help to see Alabama and South Carolina continue to stumble.
If they could go 3-0 in those, they would be 21-10. Now they'd only be 9-9 in the SEC, which normally is not a resume that stands, but
it has lately. If the league were to get six teams in, you'd be talking about 21 bids, I believe, in the last three seasons, which is, you're talking about an average of seven a year. So At least that's what they said on the broadcast last night. I didn't think that sounded right. But the point is that the SEC has been getting more and more teams in. I think the conference doesn't have that kind of parity, but it's got enough good teams that you're going to have six or seven teams in the bubble conversation. I just don't see six teams getting in. You would need Arkansas to win out, and you'd probably need Mississippi State to continue to score an impressive win or two here to get both of those teams in.
Jesse Smithy of Five Star Preps is our guest coming up on the other side on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Welcome back into the Eric Haines Show, FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. It's a Thursday, 9:30, so we go to the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline and welcome in Jesse Smithy of FiveStarPreps.com. Jesse, Brian, and Joel this morning, how are you?
Doing well, guys. Appreciate you having me on and just enjoying a little bit of a break before the storm starts back up with high school basketball. We got region tournaments getting back underway on Friday, so we got a little bit of a break right now.
Everybody gets to take a little deep breath before these region tournaments start. Some teams saw their season come to an end last week. Others will have that happen to them this weekend, the tournament time. What are some of the big stories that we're following coming into this playoff weekend?
Well, really, I mean, there's a lot of big-time matchups, especially in Division II. Of course, they're a little bit ahead in the playoff progression than Division I. State tournament berths will be on the line Friday and Saturday for Division II teams. And, of course, Webb School of Knoxville is the defending state champion in Division II. And they're going to be taking on another Webb of Bellbuckle on Saturday. And, of course, Webb Bellbuckle has Keon Johnson, the Tennessee signee, but he's been hurt all year. And not really expected to play in this game, but still, they've gone 30-3 this year pretty much without him. So it's going to be a difficult test for Webb School of Knoxville. And then Catholic plays Saturday as well and trying to notch its first kind of state tournament trip in Division II AA. And they're going to take on Innsworth, who features Ron Slay, former Vol, on the bench as a assistant coach. So, and then Grace Christian has its hands full. They have Lausanne coming to town from the Memphis area, and they have Musa Cisse, a number 8 player in the country in the class of 2021, a 6'10 forward center just that can do anything he wants to athletically. And so it's a lot of big-time matchups coming up this weekend.
Another one out there that I think this has been a fascinating team to follow this year has been Bearden. With everything that they lost from last year after the championship, they've been right back there in the thick of it this year and are looking like that they could face off with Oak Ridge coming up.
Yeah, it's a good possibility. I mean, they lost to Maryville in the District 4 AAA championship game, but like you said, I mean, still performed well, still made it to that point, having graduated 6 players off of its state championship team, and then to lose Tyler Nordine halfway through the season, who's averaging 21, 22 points per game, and to still be in that position is, I think, speaks to the testament of that program, the players and the coaches. And they have to take on Central in the first round of the Region 2 AAA tournament on Saturday. And should they win that game, they'll likely face off with Oak Ridge on Tuesday of next week in a Region 2 AAA semifinal. So both of these next two rounds for Division I teams are elimination in nature. So a lot of pressure on these kids over the next 4 to 5 days.
With you mentioned Region 2 AAA, mentioned Bearden and Oak Ridge, but you throw in Farragut, Maryville. Is that the deepest region in the AAA state tournament?
In the AAA state tournament? That's tough. That's tough to say because, as you know, Memphis kind of reigns supreme traditionally in class AAA basketball in terms of boys and girls. The Murfreesboro area is always super deep, but year in and year out in this area, you can't go wrong with the Region 2 AAA tournament. Boys and girls are just fantastic matchups, especially girls this year. It's really super deep.
Jesse, what are we looking at in some of the top matchups on the girls' side? We focused on the boys' side. I know Bearden and Farragut are back there on the girls' side as well. with the potential that they could face off this week.
Yeah, and I did a little bit of research last night, and should Farragut and Bearden girls win their region quarterfinals on Friday, they'll square off on Monday in an elimination game, and that hasn't happened since 2004. That was early in the district tournament in 2004, so they've met in region tournaments before, but not in an elimination scenario, so that just kind of ramps up that rivalry a little bit more if that happens, but there a lot of things have to happen just for that to even occur. Farragut has to beat Powell at Powell on Friday, and Powell's had a fantastic year. Of course, Bailey Trum broke the state record for career three-pointers made. She's an Appalachian State signee and can absolutely fill it up from the perimeter. So it's no given that Farragut and Bearden are going to be matching up on Monday. Not yet.
You've kind of done a dive in and a look into what Bailey's done for Powell this season, just the type of year and the career that she's put together. What's going to make her so difficult for Farragut in the opening matchup between those two teams?
I think just knowing how to guard her, she can pretty much pull up from anywhere. So it's not like she's one of those three-point shooters that has to toe the line. And so she's very adept at getting a shot off, and she has her own unique style of shooting, and she's very good at it. So, and she's not the only one. So she has a sister, Reagan Trom, who can absolutely shoot it from the perimeter as well. And so if Farragut can concoct some type of defense to focus on Bailey Trom doesn't mind passing the basketball off to our sister or any of our other teammates to try to win that game. They've won a ton of games this year. They've beaten Oak Ridge this year. So this Powell team is very good.
Jesse, your series at 5starpreps.com on new QBs part 7 features a very familiar team in this area, one that the machine has churned for a long time. What is Maryville going to do at quarterback as teams get ready for spring practice?
Right, so we focused on Maryville this week, and of course they will be losing Cade Chambers at quarterback. He signed with Indiana State. He led Maryville to a 6A state championship in 2019. And so we wanted to check in with Derek Hunt, the head coach at Maryville, and kind of see what's next behind Cade Chambers. And we got to see a little bit of that during the season. Carson Jones was the backup to Cade Chambers, and he got a good deal of playing time. And so we wanted to check in with Derek and kind of see if that's what we should expect this spring and going into the 2020 season, or could things change? And so we got a little bit of a insight from Derek Hunt as to what's going to go on with their quarterback situation. And Carson Jones is the guy right now kind of leading the charge for the next quarterback at Maryville. And that's a high-profile spot, not only in East Tennessee, but the state. But there's a little bit of a caveat to that, and we kind of break down that position in part 7 of our new QB1 series at 5starpreps.com.
In looking at your, and a great job to compile this, the spring practice dates, I remember when I was back in the dark ages in high school, spring practice was almost always after the seniors had gone through graduation. It seems like there's a wide range. Some people will be done before the start of May. Other teams won't start until you're in a week or more into May. What goes into that decision-making for coaches in this area?
Well, I think one of the movements that we're starting to see now with high school sports is the multi-sport athlete returning, and coaches are really starting to encourage that. But the drawback of that is sometimes it kind of dictates when they do their spring practice. Take Greenback, for example. They don't even do spring practice anymore. They're a very small school with a limited amount of kids. And so with all those kids playing multiple sports, baseball and track and what have you, they just go ahead and just scratch spring practice and don't do it at all. And then other schools, your AA and AAA and 4-5A size schools, they're maybe pushing theirs back into late May, thinking that, okay, when baseball is over, they'll be able to rejoin the team and we'll have as many kids as we possibly can to put together a good spring practice. And then some will just say, hey, we're going to do it in April regardless of who's here or not. So it just kind of varies by coach and by school, but you're right. It's kind of a wide-ranging list of dates, and I'm actually surprised we don't have any in March just yet. I haven't got all the schools yet, but none have started in March, and that's kind of a little bit surprising.
As spring sports getting ready to get underway as well. Jesse, what do you guys have coming up at 5starpreps.com this weekend as those region tournaments get up and going?
Yeah, we'll be continuing our football series with the new QB1. We'll be adding a new series with that. And we'll also be covering the region basketball tournaments like crazy and kind of keeping everybody up to date as to who's going to be advancing and whose season is ending. And it'll just be nonstop from here on out.
It's a great time of year, busy time of year, but I know it's a lot of fun for you and your staff. Appreciate the time each and every Thursday. Look forward to talking to you again next week and checking out all the coverage at 5starpreps.com.
All right, appreciate it, guys.
Jesse Smithy, 5starpreps.com, the master of high school sports in this area. He joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline, and his appearance is brought to you each week by Henley Roofing, henleyroofing.net. If you need a commercial roof, if you need anything for your business, Henley Roofing is where you go. HenleyRoofing.net is the website. You can see some examples of their work. But if you've been in a school, in a big retail store, chances are it has a Henley roof on it. Check out their website at HenleyRoofing.net and everything that they've done. Serving Knoxville and the surrounding areas for over 50 years. Henley Roofing Company, HenleyRoofing.net. The Eric Haines Show continues next. FM 99.1, the sports animal. The Eric Haines Show, FM 99.1, the sports animal. Ryan Rice with Joel Silverberg. EA under the weather. Not the coronavirus, I'm told.
Well, that's good.
I was also told I shouldn't joke about the coronavirus, but
I mean, you.
I'm me. Have you met me?
I mean, you shouldn't.
Yeah. Hopefully, it will not be something that ruins it. Japan has canceled everything until April. They've canceled schools are out from now through the end of March in all of Japan. Now there's only 3 days left in February, but
yeah, they also go year round, don't they?
Probably. I have no idea.
Yeah, I saw that they were having to cancel some preseason baseball games before their season starts upcoming. So a lot of stuff in just around the world is being canceled. So it's pretty significant. And then, of course, earlier this week, you all were talking about the possibility of the Olympics being affected by it, which is just horrible. So hopefully that doesn't happen. It doesn't have to come to that. And hopefully they can figure this thing out.
Yeah. I read yesterday that there's a good possibility that a lot of European sporting events will still be held, but there will be no fans in attendance. That it still provides TV programming.
Right.
But there won't be fans in attendance if this thing continues to spread the way it has. I don't think that's a bad way to go about it. You still have the games played. You still entertain people who are going to be cooped up in their houses. If you can guarantee safe travel, because a lot of people are staying home.
That's going to be the biggest thing, is getting the athletes to, you know, ensure that the athletes are safe.
Yeah.
That happened once in a minor league hockey game recently in the AHL. The snowstorm, I think it was in Charlotte, got so severe that fans were told, hey, we're not admitting anybody to come to the game. And so the teams played in an empty arena, and they said it was the most eerie feeling they had ever had in their careers.
Yeah. Well, because everybody's used to playing in front of these big crowds, or just a crowd, period. And then to go in there and have to do it without it, it's going to be interesting to watch what happens worldwide, and if the U.S. eventually takes cues from what's happened overseas and asking people to stay home, asking people to work from home. You know, we joked about it yesterday, but with the softball broadcast equipment that I carry around, that, I mean, a couple of pieces of it that I own, based on what I just own at my house, I could do the show from anywhere as long as I have an internet connection. But most people can't work from home like that.
Right.
And full disclosure, it's not the best that this show can be when I'm in one place, Eric's in another place, and you're in another place.
But it's not ideal, but we make it work.
Yeah, it's doable. It sounds good, but it's not the best. But not everybody has that freedom.
I used to ask Mickey if we could set up a board in my bedroom, and he said no.
Yeah.
That was back when I was doing the morning show.
Yeah. Oh, morning radio would be, like, as it is right now, I love filling in for Phil Williams next door, but 4:30 wake-up call just isn't something that I can do. I did it for 7 weeks when Heather was on maternity leave when I first started here, and that's not a lifestyle I could do. I'm not capable of doing it. If I could do the show from home and wake up at like 5:45, go into my office and just do the show from there, then it would be easy. You know, when I'm on the road with softball, I get up and get ready like I'm going somewhere and then sit down and do the show because there's a good chance that the maid's coming in at some point. So I'm not going to be sitting there in the boxers waiting for the maid to come in while we're doing the show. Also, there's a little decorum in doing a sports talk radio show.
Yes.
Just a little. Even if you're...
You have left during a break before to go make yourself a waffle.
Yeah.
And you've been back before the commercial break ended.
Yeah. That was Columbia, Tennessee, because I won't do that if I'm not on the same floor as the waffle maker. Because hotel elevators, you never know. You never know how long that's going to be.
Yeah.
But last year in Columbia, Eric was sick that day. He had a migraine. You and I had to do the show. So you're producing and dealing with me being somewhere else. And I was just like, I'm starving. I got to have a waffle.
Which really isn't, that's actually not hard when it's one person.
Yeah.
Accounting for two people, it's a little bit different, especially when, you know, if both sides have their own agenda or somebody walks off without explaining that to the producer, then. Yeah.
You're like, hey, okay, well.
We'll see. I guess we're just doing this with one person. All right.
Yeah. So that's tough, but we'll see how the coronavirus affects sports here. But yeah, Japan has canceled basically everything for the next month.
And that's horrible. I really hope that everything's getting better out there, and I hope they're figuring something out, and I hope people are staying safe. That's just horrendous. Yeah. So it's a tragedy. I mean, I know it's, you know, you see 2%. Well, 2% of people
is a lot of people.
It's still a lot of people when you consider the thousands of people that are getting sick.
Yeah.
So it's not the highest mortality rate that you've ever seen with some major disease, but it's a big deal. And so hopefully it stops and people figure out what's going on and how to either quarantine it or fix it or find some sort of antidote. But yeah, it's just a horrible tragedy that I hope gets corrected soon.
I'll tell you, the scary thing I read yesterday or this morning was people are getting it for a second time now in China.
Oh, goodness.
Which means, you know, most things, you get sick with something and then you can't get it again for, you know, a long period of time. Apparently, this isn't the case with that, which makes this even more concerning.
So are people really getting it for a second time, or are they just finding relief from their symptoms from a temporary period and then the symptoms flare up again?
The article I read was a lady in China had the virus the first week of January, was in the hospital, was released from the hospital, has been symptom-free for the first 2 or 3 weeks of February, and now came down with the scratchy throat again and has been diagnosed with it again.
Goodness.
So... that's a game changer too. It'll affect. Hopefully, it will not affect sports long term. Hopefully, it doesn't affect the Olympics, because we talked about that, and that seems like a very minor thing in the grand scheme of, you know, worldwide outbreak. But the Olympics are something that those athletes have worked their entire lives for, and for a lot of them, that 4 year period is the only 4 year period that they can compete in them. You know, I look at former Tennessee coach Holly Warlick. She was supposed to be on the 1980 U.S. Olympic team. The United States doesn't send a contingent to the Olympics, and she and several of her teammates had aged out of being, you know, basketball players by the time the 84 Olympics rolled on. So never got to experience that. So you hope that they go off, certainly because I'm looking forward to them, but also their athlete Simone Biles, one of the greatest gymnasts in the history of the world, is trying to win gold again. In 4 years, she won't be still be able to.
No, and
but
that's
right
why,
now she's in her prime.
That's why Gabby Douglas going to a second Olympiad.
Yeah.
For a lot of these American gold medalists in gymnastics that you've seen over the years, Sean Patterson, Carly, I can't remember Carly's last name, but
Carly Patterson. Nastia Lukin was another all-around champion.
Sean Johnson is who I was thinking of. I've got the names mixed up. Yeah, you know, you see them once and that's it.
Yeah.
And with Gabby Douglas going twice was kind of a big deal, because if you're born on the right year, then you're still kind of in that window. And that's the thing about gymnastics is you go to the Olympics, then you go to college. And it feels like that would be a step down. But also just the nations, the investment that they're making financially to build all these facilities. For a lot of places that host the Olympics, the facilities that they build, they're never used again.
Yeah.
They're just abandoned. And so the financial investment, you're just hoping that it can all get put to good use.
All right. Hour number two of the Eric Haines Show's next. 656-9900 if you want to join us. Talking some NFL on the other side on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.